The following talk was given at the Insight Meditation Center in Redwood City, California. Please visit our website at audiodharma.org.
So my name is Andrea. For those of you who have not met before, welcome. Tonight I wanted to talk about just different aspects of our experience that we begin to meet as we look at our experience through mindfulness practice. As we explore with mindfulness our kind of what we might say our aim is to meet what's actually happening in our experience, to get familiar with our experience in this very moment, what's actually going on in our own bodies and minds. And that kind of division of things happening in our bodies and things happening in our mind is a very useful kind of framing of to begin to get familiar with what's going on. So we can think about there being very distinct but interrelated processes of body and mind. And actually, you know, before we really start looking at our experience directly in the present moment, many of us may confuse or kind of mix up or conflate the experience of body with the experience of mind. Because the processes of mind are so quick to put things together, and we get a coherent experience as our mind kind of puts these things together. Sometimes as we experience things, we think certain things are physical, but they're actually mental. Or we're relating to the world. We think we're relating to the world through physical experience, but we're actually relating it to it through our mind. And so an example of this, if you just, you know, let yourself put your attention in your hand right now. Just the sensation of your hand. Just maybe close your eyes and feel into the sensations. And I'm going to name some sensations that kind of bear kinds of sensations you might experience, like vibration, and tingling, and pulsing. Now make a fist out of your hand, and that'll create some stronger sensations. Tightness, hardness, pressure. And then just let go of that tension. But don't open the hand. Maybe put it back in a fist so you know, because you know what I'm going to do here. So put it in a tight fist, and then just release the tension, but don't open the fist. And then as slowly as you can, start to open the fingers. There you might feel some stiffness. Maybe it feels like the movement is very jerky. It can be a very odd sensation. Thickness, maybe, sensations of thickness. And now open it more quickly. Maybe shake it out a little bit. And now I want you to look at your hand and think about your hand as a hand and what hands do. They reach for things, they touch things, they pick things up, they drive on the steering wheel. You just think about your hand as a hand. And as you do that, do you feel the sensations as much? So in my experience, when I'm thinking about it as a hand and what hands do, I kind of lose touch with the actual experience that we had, kind of that intimacy we had with the experience of hand. And this is one of the ways that we confuse body and mind. We may think about a particular part of the body. You know, maybe we feel something in our shoulder or in our knee. And we think we're feeling our knee. We think we're feeling our shoulder. And so we're relating to our body through the concept of knee or shoulder. And that can obscure some of the direct sensations, the direct experiential level of what's actually happening. What we actually experience in the body the Buddha had kind of some categories of physical experience almost. In the time of the Buddha, the elemental nature of the world was understood in a very simple framework, that the elements of the physical world were comprised of earth, air, fire, and water. And in our physical experience, he looked into our physical experience and basically kind of categorized the physical sensations around these elements. So, for instance, as we, you know, sit here, we can feel into the earth quality, which is the aspect of maybe solidity or firmness. Maybe you have a sense of kind of the sense of like firmness of the skeleton or the stiffness of the back, that the back has kind of a structure to it. So there are sensations associated with this aspect of experience of solidity, weight, heaviness, density. You might be able to just feel into this a little bit. You know, maybe you can feel the solidity of the skeleton a little bit. Or the hardness of your sits bones against the chair or cushion or bench. So this is some aspect of the earth element. Sometimes we can just kind of have a sense of this is a lump of earth sitting on earth. It's just physical matter. So that's one category of physical sensation, is this earth aspect. Another, the air aspect. I think the earth and air aspects are some of the more obvious sensations that we experience. The air is the quality of movement, and that includes a whole bunch of sensations like vibration. Some of the sensations we touched into in the hand, and so you might sitting here just notice. Maybe around your face or in your lips, a kind of a tingling, a vibration. Sometimes we can even experience this more broadly through the body, like just an energetic sensation in the body. And so lots of sensations in this category, sensations like vibration, tingling, pulsing, pressure is a form of air. So when we breathe in, and we feel the pressure as our lungs fill, that's air element. Or we feel the movement of the in and out breath, that's also air element. So movement of any kind is considered this air element. Sometimes other sensations, pulling or pushing, tension, tightness, these also are in this field of sensations. And so we can think about this, these types of sensations, and I'll go through the others in just a moment, but just to kind of contextualize this, the Buddha pointed to these elemental kinds of experience, the physical, this is the touch sense really, what the touch sense experiences. This is all the touch sense experiences, these elemental kind of sensations. So, as I said earlier, you know, we don't feel table. You know, when I'm touching this table, I don't feel table. I feel hardness, pressure, coolness, that kind of sensation. And so, in a way, what we're looking at with this elemental aspect of experience is we're beginning to touch into how the body communicates at its kind of basic level. How does the body communicate with us? How does it let us know what's going on in contact with the world, in contact with the physical world? It's through this, we could call this the language of the body, this elemental kind of level of experience. And so the earth aspect of experience, the wind or air aspect of experience, then the fire aspect of experience is just the simplicity of temperature. That's, you know, just heat and coolness. And so we feel that, you know, sometimes I find that if you take your hand and touch your cheek, you can get a sense of, there's often a difference in temperature between your face and your hand, and so you may get a sense of temperature there if you're not obviously experiencing temperature in the room. Some of you may be experiencing coolness in your hands and warmth maybe under your clothes. There's just different temperatures in different parts of the body. Maybe your feet are warm or maybe your feet are cool. So that aspect of experience. And then there's the moisture aspect, the water aspect of experience. This is more obviously experienced in things like perspiration or tears, but it's also understood in, it's kind of like the cohesive aspect of how our body is kind of held together. And we can kind of think about the reasoning of this with like, you know, when you take flour, if you have a lump of flour, it's just, you know, kind of falling apart. But if you add water to it, it begins to stick together. That's the cohering property of water that brings that earth element together. And so that's the understanding, is that we're kind of held together by water. And it may be actually physically true, I don't know, but the experience of water, you know, it's that feeling, that cohering quality is not so easy. But there are some places we can begin to touch into it. You know, stickiness is a fun place to begin to understand the experience of water. So take your hands and blow into them. And then push them together. And then slowly, like, pull them apart and just feel how they kind of stick. There's a little bit of stickiness in the hands there. That quality is the water quality, and you can notice that on a humid day, if you've got bare feet, how your feet kind of stick to the floor, that sticky quality. So stickiness is a sensation, actually feeling water flowing down your face or experiencing perspiration or something. This is this aspect of experience. And so this language of the body is, it's useful to get familiar with this because it helps us, at least for me, what I've began at some point to realize it was really useful to get familiar with what actually is happening in the body, because it helps me to understand the difference between the body and the mind and what is going on in the mind. You know, so much of this is not the only way we can understand what's going on in the mind in contrast to the body, but it's a good beginning place. It's a good place to help us begin to tease apart these various processes of body and mind. In my at the beginning of my practice, I began to see that I was relating to things in my experience, like my knee or something. Thinking about my knee and. A kind of maybe a pain in the knee or something, and a lot of reactivity. And as I began to understand what's actually going on there, I saw there's a whole host of things happening. There's the physical sensations in the knee, which consisted of, you know, in this case, some unpleasant sensations like burning or pulling or twisting. So there were some kind of very strong sensations in the knee, and they were unpleasant. Because I had an idea about the knee and what it did and problems that would happen if the knee didn't function, there was a lot of reactivity. There might actually, as I began to look at the experience, you know, often when I was very strongly reactive to what I thought was physical pain, what was actually going on was that I was reacting more to the idea about what might happen if my knee stopped working. And when I actually could check in and look at, well, what's actually going on there? You know, what's the actual physical sensation? Well, it's a little bit of pulling and a little bit of unpleasantness. But, you know, it's not that strong. But actually what's going on is the mind is careening around those sensations and reacting to them. And so this began to help me to understand that so much of my suffering, where I thought it was coming in relationship to physical experience, was actually connected to thoughts, ideas, things happening in my mind. And so this is what we can begin to explore, is what actually, as we begin to get familiar with the language of the body, then we can begin to tease apart, you know, what's physical and what's mental. Now, what's physically going on in our body, you know, we have some say over that. I mean, if we're sitting in a posture that's very cramped or tight, then, you know, that can create tension in the body, and we can shift the body, we can shift the posture and alleviate the tension there. And yet, a lot of what goes on in the body, you know, physical sensations that go on in the body, are not necessarily something that we can change that much. You know, when we get ill, for instance, you know, when we have a cold and our throat is sore and we have a lot of congestion, you know, a change of posture is not often going to help that. And so if we can learn to learn how our minds react to that, and begin to see that a lot of what happens in the mind is additions to experience. We're reacting not just to what's happening in the body, but then reacting to what we lay on top of it. So, you know, when we get sick, you know, we might think we're reacting to the physical discomfort of being sick, but a lot of what we might be reacting to is the frustration that we can't go out and do that fun thing, or the projection in the mind of how much we're going to have to do when we get well, because we can't do what we had planned to do. So there's other things going on than just the physical, and so it's really useful to begin to see where is that reactivity happening. So we can begin to explore the kind of different other processes. So there's the physical processes, which are revealed through this language of the body. And then there's a whole bunch of different mental processes at work. So I'll just go through some of these in a kind of maybe from more obvious to more subtle as we go through these. So some of the more obvious mental responses or mental processes are kind of our emotional reactions, our emotional responses to things. So emotions like fear, anger, confusion, hatred, irritation, impatience, annoyance, these kind of reactive emotions can be very strong. And these are mental. These are found in our mind. Now, they do influence our body. And this is, again, how we may get confused about this distinction between body and mind, because body and mind have very tightly woven feedback loops. And so when we experience a strong emotion like fear, it affects the body. So the mind experiences fear, and along with that can come thoughts, you know, ideas about what it might mean. So there's the fear, which may be just kind of this like pulling back quality. And then there's all kinds of thoughts that go with it. The reason we're afraid, the consequences of where we are. So there's thoughts, there's the feeling in the mind, the fear itself, and the thoughts that go with it. And then there's the effect that whole thing has on our body. we experience perhaps contraction in our stomach or tension in our throat or kind of a vibration, a strong vibratory feeling in our abdomen, in our stomach. And so that our body and mind do feed back with each other. And this is an interesting interplay here and another place that I found in my own practice, that the mind could get confused. So because of this interplay between emotions and the body, sometimes we can be experiencing physical sensations that are like some emotion, and then attribute those sensations to that emotion and effectively create that emotion. So an example of this in my own practice. So I got a couple examples. First I'll give kind of the context. So I've done a lot of retreats and silent retreats where we don't speak for long stretches of time, and we meet with teachers. You meet with the teacher every few days, maybe every second or third day. And so, you're sitting there, you're speaking, you've got 15 minutes, to talk to your teacher, and you haven't talked in 2 days, and here you are waiting to see your teacher. Kind of like feels like sitting outside the principal's office, or, just feels like, oh, what am I going to say? Is the teacher going to think I've got a good thing to say? So there's a lot going on in the mind. And very frequently, I experienced an agitation, a little bit of anxiety in thinking about seeing my teacher. So that was a very common experience for me, sitting and waiting for the teacher, to have this kind of, physical sensations of anxiety, a feeling of a little bit of what am I going to say, that kind of thing. And one day I was sitting, waiting for my teacher, and was experiencing these sensations, kind of vibrating sensations throughout the body. And because of the context of where I was just, this is the usual anxiety, and I was noticing it as anxiety, and I was feeling the sensations, but naming it, kind of acknowledging it or recognizing it as anxiety. And the interview ahead of me went on for a long time, which was unusual. Usually it was pretty prompt. And so I got to sit with these sensations for quite a while, maybe 10 minutes or so. And as I sat with them, I began to realize, usually when I sit with something for this long, something shifts or my mind has some more ease with it, but it doesn't feel like anything's changing here. It feels just as strong as when I sat down. And that got me a little curious. So I began looking more directly at the sensations themselves. It's like, oh, there's sensations. There's like vibrating sensations in my legs and in my feet. And they're like really like, jumpy, vibrating sensations. And they're coming like up they're rising up the body. And so I was feeling these sensations much more closely. And I dropped the attribution of anxiety, and I was just feeling these sensations. And as I felt it, I realized that this was actually a pleasant experience, and it was kind of joy. It was the experience of joy that I was having. So the bodily sensations, the vibratory bodily sensations, were kind of similar to the sensations of anxiety. And because of the context that I was sitting in, I was attributing anxiety to the sensations. So we can, if we're not careful or not curious about, what's the difference between body and mind, we can confuse these. So I find it helpful, if you're observing sensations in the body, to just connect with them as sensations as opposed to, oh, that sensation in my stomach, that's probably fear, or that feels like whatever. One teacher in a Dharma talk, John Travis, said that he found that this physical sensations for him, I don't think this is true for everybody, but for him, the physical sensations that came with lust and that came with anger were very similar. And that it was what was going on in the mind that distinguished between them. There's actually, I understand some science about this at this point, about these, you know, there's not actually that much in the way of like what goes on physically in connection with emotions. I heard this on NPR, somebody who's written a book about emotions pretty recently, done some research, and this researcher claims that mostly there's like four different sensations in the body around emotion, and they're only distinguished as a whole host of different emotions based on our attribution in the mind. So it's really useful. It's really useful to distinguish body and mind, because sometimes, especially if we have some kind of familiar patterns and habits of mind that produce similar sensations in the body, sometimes our body can have habits, shift into those habits. And then we might, feeling those bodily experiences, think, well, okay, that must be that I'm feeling angry or frustrated or confused. And so it's really useful to kind of know which is coming first. Is it the physical sensation, or is it the mental, that something that is happening in the mind that's kind of influencing the body? So this kind of feedback between body and mind goes both directions. The body can influence the mind, and the mind can influence the body. So another example of this, I have something happening in my experience where hormones kind of get released, you know, randomly, as far as I can tell. There's no rhyme or reason to it. It's just get these odd hormone releases every now and then. And when this first started happening to me, I would notice, I would be just driving along, and suddenly there'd just be this feeling of dread. I'd be at a stoplight, and it's like something's wrong. And I'd like start looking around, what's wrong? You know, what's wrong? What's wrong? And then I would realize that there were some particular physical sensations that were the strengthening of that hormone release. And it's like, oh, right, that's what this is. There's nothing wrong. It is just this hormone releasing. And so, but if I hadn't been aware of it, I easily could have found something to dread in my mind, in my life. It's like, there must be something going on that I'm dreading. And, you know, we can construct things. So this is, again, you know, this kind of interplay between body and mind and the usefulness of understanding what are the physical sensations and what are the processes of mind. So these emotional reactivity is one level of mental experience. A subtler level of mental experience is, you know, it's connected to this emotional reactivity, but it's like just the whether we like something or don't like something. You know, just it's a more subtle level of mental response. Quieter in the mind. But often we might think that the liking or not liking is kind of connected directly to another experience, which is also in the mind, that of whether something is pleasant or unpleasant. So this is another very important flavor of mental experience that's really useful to begin to recognize. Because a lot of that reactivity that I just talked about kind of begins on that layer of something's pleasant or something's unpleasant. When something's pleasant, we tend to like it, we want it, we want more of it, we hold on to it, and so we're in that mode of greed. When something's unpleasant, we don't like it, we don't want it, we're in the mode of fear, aversion, anger, hatred, irritation. So there's the feeling tone of experience, whether something's pleasant, unpleasant, or neutral. That we often think in relationship to the body, so that everything that we experience has a feeling tone. All physical experience, everything we experience in our body has a feeling tone. Everything we experience in our mind has a feeling tone. So every contact, every physical contact, every mental contact has a feeling tone. And we might think with respect to the body, you know, contact with the body, the, you know, pleasant or unpleasant sensations that are connected to the body, we might think that that is physical, the pleasant or unpleasant. But the Buddhist understanding is that that is a mental experience, even if it's connected to physical sensation. So we, you know, cut ourselves with a knife. That unpleasant quality is not in the sensation. It's created by the mind. Now, this is you don't have to believe this, but I'll give you a couple examples to kind of point to how you might understand this. So, you know, suppose you're on a busy street corner, and you're waiting for a friend to join you. You're kind of waiting for a friend, but there's all kinds of people going by you, and you're just waiting, and then, you know, you feel somebody come up and touch your shoulder. And because of the context, you're waiting for the friend, you feel that. It's like you assume basically it's your friend, and that contact may be felt as pleasant. It's just a gentle touch on the shoulder. Okay. So that contact may be felt as pleasant. Now imagine you're on that same busy street corner and you're not expecting a friend and you feel that contact. That might be experienced as unpleasant because you're not expecting to be touched. And so the context in which the sensation happens can influence how we experience it, whether it's pleasant or unpleasant. I actually read in a book on neurobiology that neurobiology agrees with this, that the feeling tone of experience is constructed by the mind, that they say it actually happens in the brainstem. So it's a pretty low level in the mind, you know, brain. It's not like higher brain functioning, but that it's not actually at the physical, in the like nerve touch and the nerve endings. That's not where the pleasant unpleasant happens. And I understand that when people have Hansen's disease, this is part of what happens, is that they lose that sense of pleasant unpleasant. It's something in there. Something that happens is that they lose that sense of pleasant unpleasant, and because of that loss, they begin to. It ends up just damaging their body because they don't have that feedback about what's pleasant and unpleasant, and I think that's happening in the brain. So this pleasant unpleasant is a mental experience, even for our physical sensations. Our mental experience is easier to understand as pleasant and unpleasant. So something like happiness is pleasant. You know, that we can really understand as a mental happiness. And something like anger, usually unpleasant. The quality in the mind of anger, unpleasant. And so thoughts, ideas, moods, emotions all have feeling tones associated with them in addition to our physical. But we can begin to recognize, okay, so there's sensations And so again, the seeing this feedback loop that can happen. And it's easiest to talk about this with respect to unpleasant experience. I mentioned pain earlier. So there's like sensation, you know, the sensation in the body somewhere where there might be a physical unpleasant experience. At one point, I was sitting cross-legged for a long time, and the bone, the ankle bone, was pressing into the ground. So a lot of hard pressure there happening for a long time. And that created a strong physical sensation that was experienced as unpleasant. And yet as I began looking at it, and there was initially there probably was some aversion there. There was, you know, the mind that did not like that. So there's the pleasant, the unpleasant, there's liking and not liking of that physical sensation. And then there's the any more reactivity that comes from that. Anger or frustration or irritation. And so if that's going on, if you're experiencing anger, for instance, or frustration, along with that physical sensation that is being experienced as unpleasant, then you've got the unpleasantness of the physical piece plus, or really, let's say, multiplied by the unpleasantness of the mental response, the aversion. And that creates a feedback loop that makes the entire experience feel like screamingly unpleasant. And so we're sitting there with that, you know, that experience of unpleasant sensation and the reactivity, the aversion to it. The experience there is that at least my experience, when there's aversion to an unpleasant physical sensation, it feels like the physical sensation is really, really unpleasant. But then as we begin to distinguish these processes, begin to recognize, okay, well, there's the body, there's the pressure, there's the pulsing, there's the burning sensation, and there's the unpleasantness of that, and then there's the frustration and the unpleasantness of that. As our mind begins to kind of tease those apart, sometimes what happens is that we'll experience that because you're sitting there with this pressure, that pressure isn't changing much over time. I mean, it'll change a little bit, but the mind state can change quite a lot. The aversion can get stronger, the aversion can get weaker, and we can start to see that when the aversion gets stronger, it's like that physical pain just amps right up. It feels like the physical pain is amping up. As the aversion gets weaker, it feels like, oh, that's not so bad. I can deal with that. At one point, as I was sitting with this experience of the pressure against the ankle bone, the aversion vanished completely. And the experience was that this was simply unpleasant, strongly unpleasant. It was a strong, unpleasant sensation. But it was just an unpleasant sensation. There was no not liking of that sensation. There was no aversion to the sensation. It was just an unpleasant sensation. And with that, that was one of my first kind of clear understandings that what the mind, what I called pain, was a construction of the mind. Because that experience of strong, unpleasant experience, it was unpleasant, but it wasn't experienced as pain, which was interesting to me. It's an unpleasant experience, but it's not pain. So pain is actually in the mind. And this is another big place of learning that we begin to see as we begin to distinguish all these different functions of body and mind. We see where pain is created in relationship to the body, there's physical unpleasant sensation. The pain is a response in the mind. That's hard to actually believe. So just explore, just experiment, you know, play with these, seeing these different processes of body and mind. And so those are some of the more obvious processes of body, of mind. The pleasant, unpleasant, the liking, the not liking, and the reactivity. A couple of subtler processes of mind. One is that as we look out into the world, as we experience our body, we see things, we hear things, there's a process in our minds that's responsible for recognizing experience, that sees things and recognizes it as clock and chair and exit sign and people and carpet, this, and experiencing in my body, you know, the sensation, you know, toes are against the floor, you know, it's like, it feels like I feel the toes, but I don't feel the toes. I feel pressure, I feel hardness, I feel different aspects of hardness, one foot against the other. I'm not actually feeling toes. But the concept of toes is applied to that experience. Like the concept of hand is applied to this experience. When we're picking something up, it's my hand picking that up. But that's cool. That's coolness. The actual experience is coolness and hardness and stiffness in the hand. So this process by which we recognize experience, this is a very powerful place where we often get confused, thinking we're relating to actual experience, but actually relating to experience through concept. This is, maybe I'll talk next week about perception, because it's a really, it's a huge area of how we get confused and deluded in our experience. Because we assume that, so looking out at this in this room, I see people, and you know, feels like I'm just seeing who you are, but it's almost impossible for me to just see you as you are, because I mean, what I'm experiencing actually, I'm not actually experiencing you. I'm experiencing what might be called something like a reflection in the mind. That's all that I'm experiencing of you. And because what I'm experiencing of you is constructed by my mind, it's very prone to ideas and beliefs and views that come from my history. And so I think, you know, we often think we're just seeing things as they are, but we're seeing things, you know, through our mind is constructing the experience. And we tend to, you know, bring in our views and opinions and ideas about our concepts, about our ideas of what we're seeing, and not recognize that we're doing that. And so this is another place that's really useful to begin to recognize, okay, what I'm seeing is it is my mind's construction based on my perceptions. If we can remind ourselves of this and remind ourselves that we are not seeing reality as it actually is out there, so much suffering can be averted. And so I think I'll go into that more next time. There's so much to explore there. There's so much to look at. And so this is one of those processes in the mind, and it gets tied up with not just the perception. I mean, the perception can be very simple, like, you know, chair and people, but then there's the ideas and the beliefs that come along, more processes in the mind, ideas and beliefs and views, what we think about what we're seeing, our kind of underlying, you know, conditioning that's created our sense of what's important. So ideas, beliefs, and views are also happening. And so if we can begin to recognize, okay, so there's perception going on and probably pulling in a whole bunch of views about what I'm perceiving. So for instance, you know, you might see somebody in the street and, you know, have a kind of a immediate reaction to them. This person's a stranger. You don't know this person. You see somebody and there's just this immediate reaction to this person. And if you kind of explore or kind of reflect a little bit, you might recognize, oh, this person kind of has a shape, or, you know, is tall and looks kind of like that person that was really mean to me when I was a kid. And so that baggage gets drawn in to that perception. And a relationship is formed just through that, you know, just that seeing. So that perceptual process is another area of process in the mind. And we're not going to stop perception, but it's useful to recognize that this is a process in our mind. We aren't just simply seeing things as they are. I think it was Anais Nin who said this famous line, "We don't see things as they are. We see things as we are." There's so much truth to that. And then there's just a process of the process in the mind that just simply recognizes experience, not recognizes objects, but just knows experience. So this is a really simple process in the mind. It's a subtle one. But every experience that we have, the only way we know it is because we've got this consciousness. So our physical sensations, our emotions, you know, we know them because there's this conscious process going on. And so every contact, every touch, every sight, every smell, there's this, you know, we can think of it as there's the Buddha described it as where there's the eye, and there's stuff out there, there's forms, and then there's the consciousness when those meet. So the we do not see without consciousness. So the eye doesn't see unless there's some kind of consciousness there. And so we can notice, there's kind of a way that we can recognize the difference between their seeing that's happening, you know, the color and form that's out there, what we're seeing. And then there's this knowing of seeing. So every experience has both, like, what is happening, the seeing, the smelling, the hearing, the tasting, the touching, the physical sensation, the pressure, the tension. And then there's a process of mind that's responsible for just kind of saying, yep, that's happening. It's a very simple process of knowing. They come like so close together. You can kind of look at one side and kind of be more interested in maybe the experience of the pressure, or that stickiness, or that coolness or heat. You can kind of look at one side and be more interested in that quality. Or you might be able to just kind of be curious about the fact that you know pressure or heat or tension or coolness. So there's the knowing side also. So some of you who may be familiar with some of the Buddhist teachings may recognize that I've basically kind of explored through what the Buddha talked about as five processes of body and mind: body, feeling, perception, mental formations, which covers a whole bunch of things. That includes the emotional reactivity, the liking, not liking, the beliefs, the views, ideas. So mental formations is a big category. And then the knowing. And he basically just laid it out and said, this is what happens. This is all that happens. in our direct experience. And it's useful to get familiar with these because we so often get interested or get pulled into more the content of what's happening. The idea of the view that we have, or the thought, the content of the thought we have, or the idea about this pain and what it means. And we're not so much interested in connecting to the actual experience. And this is where the Buddha said that we could begin to find some freedom. It's when we begin to get familiar with what's actually happening. Because our suffering tends to happen in relationship to kind of getting hooked into these ideas and views and beliefs and the content around what's happening. So it's time to stop. I thought I was going to have time for questions tonight. I didn't. So thank you for your attention. And next week, I will talk about perception. Thank you.